Welcome to Milestone Moments, the show where we explore the journeys that lead to success. I'm Sheila Slick, your host and founder of 5 Milestones. In every episode, we will bring you insights from the minds of entrepreneurs, leaders, and experts who will share not just their expertise, but the milestone moments that have reshaped their journeys and led to significant achievements. So if you're looking for motivation, you're in the right place. Subscribe now and discover the milestones that mark the path to success. Welcome to another episode of Milestone Moments in Business and Leadership. I'm your host, Sheila Slick, and today my special guest is Wandana Piranik. She is a Thinkfluencer, a founder, and an idea architect who launches things and then grows them. As a USA Today and Wall Street Journal best-selling author, a TEDx speaker, and a brand builder, she brings extensive experience from corporate giants like Procter & Gamble and Kellogg's to startups and major brands. Through Active Ingredients, Inc., Wandana helps businesses make powerful choices and connections that lead to impeccable execution. And her latest book, which is what I'd love to talk about today, is called Might. Welcome to the show, Wandana.
Thank you, Sheila. So great to be here. I'm delighted.
And I'm excited to have you on the show. Tell us a little bit about what led you to write that and what the book is.
Yeah. So you're going to laugh when I tell you part of the story anyway, and part of the story you might cry. But I'm a marketer and strategist by profession. And I did the corporate consulting freelance work for about 25 years or so. And then I got bored, and it only took me 25 years, but I was starting to see the same sort of trends and patterns happening. And I'm a creature of variety and not knowing what the future brings, total thrill of victory and the agony of defeat kind of a girl. What I noticed was the awe-inspiring human capacity to brilliantly solve the wrong problems and to do it again and again and again. And I just like, this is insanity. We have to stop this. So I'm on a quest to change that, because a lot of times we're solving stuff that doesn't need to be solved. And there's countless cases like that, you know, and I can point you to everyday stuff that we do that's like that. So I really want to help us be more effective thinkers, not just different thinkers, but effective thinkers. I want us to be better and swifter decision makers. And I really think that we just need a little bit of an update to our mental operating system to really get us going to a much higher level than we vibrate at today.
So give me one specific example how we can take that action.
So I'll give you one that is very common, and it has nothing to do with business or, you know, work. It's just gardening. And how many times have you hired a gardener or been out there yourself pulling weeds, right? Because we want to keep our lawn and our garden looking beautiful and pristine. And instead of actually solving the problem and the right problem, you keep solving the wrong one, which is pulling weeds. Well, it's like having hair. You know, when you cut your hair, it grows faster. That's the thinking anyway. Well, weeds is very true. Like, the more you pull them, the faster they grow. Because it's like, oh, somebody's like feeding me and doing something to kind of get me going. It's like when you trim a plant, it grows faster. Anyway, so if we actually solve the problem of the weed growing in the first place, we would not be pulling weeds. And not only that, but we would have saved a lot of time, money, and energy in getting the problem right. So one of the things that I teach about, so there's three things that I teach about as sort of a start to this idea of thinking more effectively, is solve for the outcome, not the problem. So big difference. So when we solve for the outcome, it's the outcome is, hey, I want to get rid of my weeds. That's my goal, right? It's not getting rid of the weeds in that moment. It's completely not having them come back. And so how do we do that? Because when you solve for the outcome, you may have different actions that you have to take, different research that you have to do, different people that you have to get engaged. you try to understand whether the problem that you think you have, you know, you list them and you are they related to anything else? Are they, you know, related to each other? How do you even know you have the right problem? How do you know it's a problem that you actually can see? Because oftentimes there's problems that we can't see. And so that's one of the first principles I teach about. It sounds really simple, really hard for people to execute because, you know, it's like a child. When a child falls and stumbles, our first instinct is to go and help that child, right? To, oh my God, are you okay? Like, you know, and instead, if you just stand back, as hard as it is to do, what do you want the outcome to actually be? You want the child to be more resilient, more stronger, not have those little panic attacks. So you give them the courtesy, so to speak, of letting them learn it on their own. So there's countless examples like that, but there's also examples in history, which, you know, if we talk about the book, then I'll get into that a little bit because they're really, really fascinating.
The book is out now, right?
The book is out now. Yeah, it just launched and it's called MIGHT, M-I-G-H-T, and it stands for might as in power. So the power to solve the impossible and change everything. And might as in possibility. So how might we solve this? So where do you go when nothing seems to work or, you know, you don't know where to begin? And so it gives really good, easy to read, but really powerful tactics on how you get out of pretty much any situation that you might encounter that's less than favorable or where you're really stuck. There's no reason for any of us to be stuck. There really isn't. It's just usually a shift in the way you think, and boom.
So this is for personal development rather than a business book.
Well, it's interesting because it's really meant for people who are leaders and leaders in terms of thinking. So it doesn't mean a leader doesn't have to have a C in front of your title. It means that people who lead. So if you think about it in that context, it's not restricted to personal versus business because these are principles that you can use in everyday life or your work. I mean, I wrote it thinking about more work-related stuff, but as I was writing, I was thinking like, I could use this here. You know, you come across so many scenarios, but really it's kind of a combination, I would say.
So what does the word limitless mean to you?
It just means that, you know, living life in a way that is completely free of any hurdles or any restrictions or handcuffs or in any way being stuck. Because the truth is that in order to get limitless, you have to create options for yourself to be able to make choices. And when you have that, there's always a path forward. So it's really how do we orchestrate those options? And if you're solving for the outcome, you will automatically come up with more than one option. And so therefore you have choices and you can make those choices. And when you're solving for the outcome, you know, let's say you have three options that you've created. You may think one is better than the other, but sometimes you don't know until you test them, right? So it's, and we're all like that. That's human nature because we're curious creatures. And I know I certainly am. So it's this notion of never being stuck, never wondering, like never having expectations of what the final destination has to be. So it's really living quite open-mindedly, but there's no limiting beliefs. There's no things that you cannot do because it's just simply not true. Now, somebody said to me, okay, so find a way to fly to the moon tomorrow. I mean, I don't have the technical ability to do that, but there's lots of teams who need this kind of thinking to create those options for us, right? But if somebody said, okay, I've got this business problem, there's one in the book actually that talks about this factory that was creating perfume and they were selling it in a retail store. So, you know, you have the manufacturer who's a maker of the perfume, and then you have the retailer who sells the perfume in their store. And what was happening is all the cases that were going to the retailer from the manufacturer were not completely full. So they were having cartons in there. They all had cartons. They were full with cartons, but the cartons didn't always have a bottle in there. So what they did is they spent millions of dollars trying to figure this out, changing their manufacturing line, you know, testing it, the whole bit. And still, it wasn't making that much of a difference. And so at one point, they just observed what was going on in all the way from start to finish down the line. And they saw this guy who was in, who was a newer employee, and he was sitting back in his chair, and all he did was put the fan on at the end of the line. So all the empty boxes flew off, and all the ones that were full were actually went into the cases. So, you know, it's a very, like, sometimes we don't think about the simplest of ideas. You don't need to spend all kinds of money. Like, you don't need to be, you know, an executive. You just need to think more effectively. So that's really what it's about for me.
I love that, because it was a very simple example. It was a fan. It was just a light bulb moment that worked.
Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, I've had a pretty crazy life in the last couple of years. I started writing the book because of what I said. But then I had a bit of a break because I ended up being diagnosed with breast cancer, and then went into a coma. And went into a coma for about 2 weeks, was in the hospital for about 2 months because I had lost the use of my lungs. And then three days after I came out of the hospital, I did my TEDx talk. So, you know, it just talks about being very determined. Yeah, but I didn't have to do that, right? It was a choice that I made. And throughout, first of all, I had the best coma, so nobody worry about that. Wouldn't recommend it, but if you have to have one, it was a great one. But what I was going to say is that coming out of that, I was so impressed with my ICU team and the way they handled stuff. And a lot of it was what I was already teaching and talking about, which is the three principles I told you I was going to say is that the first is solving for the outcome, not the problem. The second is really suspending your state and self in a state of deliberate curiosity. Big difference. Deliberate is a big word. And the third is embracing intellectual humility. So those are my three principles that I talk about a lot. That's where I start. And then the book goes on to give you all kinds of strategies.
When you got out of the hospital, did it affect at all what you spoke about or how you felt about that TED talk? Because the TEDx talks are normally inspirational or motivational, and you perhaps came out with a whole new experience. And I only ask because I had, many years ago, I ended up in the hospital, and it was when I walked out, it was just like, if I was able to overcome that, I'm unstoppable or limitless in your terms. Did it give you that feeling when you came out?
It definitely did. I mean, first of all, I'm a very positive, very strong individual. And I learned how much of that I was as I came out. But I also had an incredible, you know, medical team. And I also had an incredible family around me and also friends. So all of that made a huge difference for me. There wasn't a day in the hospital that my family didn't come and, you know, sit with me. There also wasn't a day where I didn't have at least one friend stop by and hang out for a bit. So it was, that just shows you the kind of relationships that you have with people. People came from all over, ready to fly across the world, across the country. So that really kind of changed me, is to see the love that people have for you. I never really cried about anything. I was never sad. I was just happy that I was going in the right direction. One of my biggest fears was losing my singing voice. And it took me a long time to get that back. And I'm still working on it. Like, I'm just giving it time. But I've had so many other tests and procedures happen, and I continue to even now. So I have to brace myself, but I'm just, you know, the way I looked at it is, the reason I'm here is because my work on this earth is not done. So get it done. And when it's done, I won't need to be here anymore. It's as simple as that. So I feel like there's definitely, you know, a reason why I'm here. And oftentimes people will ask me if I think everything happens for a reason. And I actually don't. But what I do believe, because there's a lot of things I can't explain what the reason could possibly be. And you can imagine what the horrible circumstances of that are, or the uncanny stuff that happens. But For me, what I believe is that everything that does happen, make sure you give it a purpose. Otherwise, it would have happened in vain. So when you have, you know, you hear these stories of when you have a child passing away, maybe there's money towards research that you donate that can help save all these other people, you know, or maybe there's a situation where, you know, you change a traffic pattern because it's becoming too tragic for people to meet at this intersection. So there's lots of things like in real life that we can use this book for, but also in terms of business. And there's a really interesting story about, I don't know if you know, I love World War II stories. And one of them is about Abraham Vald. And I don't know if you know who he is, but he was part of the super secret strategic team that advised the military in the U.S. on many things that they should or should not do, made up of like 10 incredible brains. And Abraham was one of them. And, you know, there was a situation where a lot of the planes that were coming back from World War II were hit all over their fuselage. And the military was getting really worried about, oh my gosh, there's all these holes everywhere. We have to stop this. So we got to put a shield on that part of the plane. And that's what the idea that they came up with. But they can't put it, they can't make it too heavy or too all encompassing because it changes the sort of the operating of the plane and also makes the plane heavier. Like there were a lot of complications that way. So they had all these restrictions. So the idea was to put a shield around the fuselage because that's where the holes were. And so just as a final check, they took it to this strategic group, the SRG. And they said, okay, this is our story. This is what we'd recommend. Do you have any questions? We just need your go ahead and then, you know, we'll get right on it. And Abraham Wald stops and says, tell me about the planes that aren't coming back. Those are the ones that we need to protect. And those are the ones that were getting hit in the nose. So now the protection is on the noses, not the fuselage, because the fuselages can handle the holes because they're coming back. But it's the ones who didn't come back that are relevant. So it's, sometimes it's looking at things differently and all of a sudden it's eye opening. And that's kind of what my coma did for me, I think, is just what about the stuff that I can't see? What am I missing? What am I not getting at? So it talks about, you know, examples like that in the book, too. It's a really great read, actually. Lot of positive feedback. And if you want to consider about first principles thinking or your reticular activating system or the neuroscience behind stuff, there's that. But there's also stories that give you anecdotal examples and why certain things happen such that you can understand and govern yourself accordingly so that, you know, you're not wasting your time. Because, you know, that's pretty limited. So I think, you know, there's a lot of questions that'll prompt you and ask you. I'm actually developing a field book for it as well. So that's coming. But for now, it has, if you buy the paperback version, it has an email course attached to it that'll give you some thought starters. So that's exciting.
So what's your mission now? Because you're no longer in corporate, you're focusing on speaking and writing.
I really want to help. Well, helping people understanding what living limitless means, and that's based on a lot of research that I did. Because ultimately, that's what we want to feel, right? We want to feel limitless. We want to feel peace. We want to feel we can close our eyes and, you know, there's no boundaries, right? So that's my goal, and the way for me to do that is helping people to think through it. So it's really about upgrading your mental operating system, is the way I say it. And so to me, it's not about the things that we have, all the tools. It's about understanding the way we think and how we use what we do have to our greatest ability. And it sounds like motherhood, but it really is about the thinking aspect. Like, you know, there's a stat that, you know, the human mind has like 60,000, maybe 70,000 thoughts a day, and 95% of them are redundant. So imagine if we were to change that, right? If you convert some of those thoughts, even 1%, to something where you could actually take action on, it would be pretty amazing. So that's really my goal, is to, how can I help? Because, you know, I don't want to be a star. I'm not interested in that. I want to help people live beyond and do better, way beyond they ever thought they could do, because it is possible.
What one thing can we do today to break through a limiting belief to allow us to live limitless?
One of the principles I talk about is curiosity. And so, and you'll even in my LinkedIn post, you'll see at the end of it, I always sign it with, you know, stay curious, my friends. And so curiosity is a big thing for me. And, but people say, oh, yeah, like, I'm really curious too. Like, I'm curious about everything. It's like, it's deliberate curiosity. It's being curious when you don't want to be. It's being curious when something makes you angry. It's being curious in everything that you approach, asking a lot of questions. And people hate that, but that's okay. Because you're trying to understand, you know, it's not that you're not questioning people to question them to see if they know their stuff. You're questioning because you're truly interested. So it's that kind of thing. So let's say you and I are having a conflict, right? And we're not agreeing. People will say, let's agree to disagree. Well, what is that? Like, that doesn't, you know, help us progress in any way, you know? But if you say, you know what, Sheila, I have to tell you, like, I totally didn't get to where you are. And I'm really curious to understand how you got there, because I think I could really learn something. So imagine it becomes adversarial to becoming, you know, collaborative all of a sudden. And you might just make your next best friend there. But so to me, this idea of deliberate curiosity is really critical. And if I could leave you with one skill, that's the skill that I would say develop to the best of your ability and go beyond. There's lots of ways to be more deliberate in that.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Where can we find or connect with you online?
Best is LinkedIn. I'm on there quite a bit and I respond to everything. And my book, the book is on, the website is thebookofmight.com.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, I'm delighted. I'm so glad we had this conversation. I was really looking forward to it.
Me too. And thank you all for joining us on another episode of Milestone Moments in Business and Leadership. Until next time.
Did you know that Byers Airport Subaru is the oldest Subaru retailer in the entire country? And we're conveniently located right by the airport. Start your journey today at columbussubaru.com. Byers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.